Well, I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. I thought I'd get that off my chest first, because that's the most frequently asked question that I've had over the last 6 years plus. Why are you doing this? Well, back in 1997, I got mad as hell. You've all heard of Mike Harris, I'm sure. He's the guy that cornered the market on common sense and started the common sense revolution back in the 90s in Ontario. He was also the guy who was the master of misinformation. And I'm just going to tell you one example, but this is an issue that you have to deal with when you're in this milieu, is misinformation constantly coming out of provincial government. But the one that really got me upset was when he was trying to get elected, and he did get successfully elected. He said, we're going to have to take over the business of funding of education 100% at the provincial level. We'll just scoop all of the money that's raised locally, and then we'll dole it back out across the province. Why did he think we had to do that? Well, what he said was, those trustees, curse their black hearts, were continually raising the rates of tax locally, and that had to stop. What he forgot to tell folks was that the reason that the trustees had to do that was over the 80s and 90s, what the provincial government had done is invert the rate of funding by the province versus by the municipality from a 60-40 provincial share to a 40-60 provincial share. Well, of course, education does cost money, and therefore the trustees had to bring their share locally back up to 60. So increase taxes locally. Had nothing to do with trustees, had to do with the folks in Queen's Park. Anyway, that along with his tax cut mantra led him to power, and he exercised power brutally. He had a tax cut mantra, unfortunately, and he convinced people, though, that he was the fiscal manager extraordinaire. And, of course, if you leap forward to the last couple of months and you think about what you're hearing out of Ontario, you've probably heard that we've got a $5.6 billion budget, which I call budget deficit, that is, which I call the Harris hangover. And it's one of the greatest ironies probably of all time that this Mr. Fiscal Manager left the province in that shape. In any case, in November 1997, there was an election. I decided I would run in it. The incumbent trustees in my zone, the boards were being, two boards, major boards were being amalgamated at the time. The incumbent trustees had decided not to run. The main rationale that seemed to be coming from them was, all the decisions are now going to be made in Queen's Park with this new regime. Why would anybody want to be a trustee? Well, for me, the answer was simple. You needed trustees locally to keep an eye on what's coming out of Queen's Park. Because if we don't, if nobody fights back, we're going to end up with public education in a hell of a mess. And the fact of the matter was that no matter how hard we fought and fought back, they did manage to get public education into a bit of a mess. So we faced six tough years after that. With Pam, we're going to tell you the story of that past 6 years. We're going to talk about strategy, tactics, lessons learned. You'll pull out of it what you want, but you're going to learn that it takes a lot of very hard work. You have to work smart. You have to work together. You have to work with your networks. There's huge talent available to you to do this work. Take advantage of it. You have to sustain the effort. There's not a lot of downtime. The trustees have to maintain that tension between the province and the local government. We have to be the watchdogs. This was a change which I still don't think has really sunk into a lot of trustees in Ontario that don't think what we did was right. But what we did was successful, and I think that it really did reflect a significant change in the role of trustees. You need to use the media. You need to create events that keep your story in front of the media. You'll hear about some of those events. Some of them are a little hard to take, but at least they're events and they get the story out. You need to be bold. You need to make, in your case, education an election issue. You do have an election in the offing. It's long enough away that you can make a significant difference to that election. Main thing you're going to learn is it can be done.
We'd like to tell you what was happening both at the board level and the provincial level, but also for many of you in similar boats that what we were in, it percolates down to the classroom and the individual child. Over the course of a few years, I had the wonderful opportunity to meet many, many caring parents and other activists in the education community who basically had many stories to tell. In a sense, I'm going to use the story I know best, that of my own child, but he's representative of many, many children, hundreds of children, particularly special needs children, and I know you're feeling the pinch around it, special education too, but he represented what many of those children were going through, so I'll tell you a little bit about his classrooms and his experiences. In 1998, my son Nicholas was 7 years old, and he had just been diagnosed with speech and learning disability with gross and fine motor skill difficulties, and he was placed in a special needs class. Now, certainly as a parent, when this happens to you, it fuels your involvement and your caring about education. Special needs legislation generally requires that parents get more involved in their children's education, and certainly this is what happened to me, in fact. Nicholas was placed in a wonderful special needs class with a teacher who I keep in touch with to this day. I saw her a couple of weeks ago in the grocery store, a wonderful, wonderful, caring woman. He was at Elgin Street School and had a very active parent advisory council there. And during the first year, I got involved with the Ottawa-Carleton Assembly of School Councils. Now, to explain that, maybe, and to give you some ideas, it certainly helped us along the way in organizing parents. This is an association of over 100 PACs in the Ottawa area, and what it allowed us to do is build our strength tremendously by bringing all these parents from different parts of the region, parents with many different political views and backgrounds together, to work in a common direction. So at that point, it was very interesting to see the beginnings of a dynamic of an organization that had been fairly conservative and fairly politically inactive, in fact, become very politically active over the next few years. So what were you doing to have fun at that time, Jim?
Well, early 1998, of course, brand new trustee, brand new board, in fact, amalgamated, and one of the first things we had to do was get down to figuring out what the budget was going to look like for the year beginning that September 1998. So I just want to tell you just really quickly about that first budget. It was very, very difficult, of course, because we had to start the march towards cutting, in rough terms, somewhere around $85 or $100 million. And so our staff have the responsibility of bringing us a balanced budget for us to start our consideration. And they brought one which, among many other things, included a cut to special education resources, psychologists and so on, speech paths, you name it. The cut was about $3.4 million, if I recall correctly. And we said to our staff, you know, we'll obviously consider this, you put it in front of us, would you mind telling us what the impact of these cuts might be on the education of our young people? Well, we waited and waited for an answer, never did get one, and so we said, well, if we don't have that answer, we're not going to make this cut. And so I proposed that we would use some of the reserves, which thankfully the boards that had amalgamated had brought forward into our board. And we did apply about $3.4 million in reserves for this purpose. And the very next day, the press had a field day with that, and there was a nice editorial, and I got my first taste of what it's like to have your name in lights. Bright lights. Because what they did was they said, even Jim Libby, a chartered accountant, for goodness sake, said we ought to waste reserves by propping up a special education program. That was the way they looked at it. And that basically was where they were going to be coming from for the next 6 years. So it was an interesting signal. What I did was, not having a lot of experience with that, got a little upset. And I wrote about a 2 or 3 page letter, which I was going to send. And then I thought, well, before I send it, I should talk to some people with more experience than me and see what I ought to do with it. And of course, as communications folks will often tell you, the best thing to do with a letter like that is put it under your pillow and forget about it. And of course, I'm always one for taking advice, so I did. Looking back, though, I'm not sure that was the right thing to do. As you'll see, we started taking on the media, for goodness sake, because they weren't going to get on our side. So we had to accept that and nevertheless get events and get in the media whether we liked it or not. What we did, Pam, over the first few years then, 98, 99, 2000, we had a board which was split. There were 12 of us, and about six of us were prepared to get aggressive with this government, and the other six wanted us to take it easy on them. They would tell us things like, you make more friends with honey, and that kind of stuff. And so we said, well, you know, so we couldn't really get aggressive, but we did get analytical. We did, on a very regular basis, tell the government what it was that was wrong with their funding formula with respect to salary gap. Here's an example of how simple these problems were. We calculated how much salary we have to pay our people. We know that, a very easy calculation. We calculated how much money the government was giving us to cover those salaries, and the difference was $30 million. I don't have to tell you which way. We were $30 million short. We were short on transportation money, facilities money, special education money, you name it, and we could analyze all of those things. And one of the good things about the funding formula was there is a certain amount of transparency, not complete transparency, but a certain amount of transparency. So you knew what it was that they thought they were giving you money for, and you could analyze that versus what the real costs were. So we became very analytical and very communicative, but just not too aggressive.
So we're in 1999 by now, and I'm sure many of you are seeing similarities. Two things happened. Some of the classes were starting to close, particularly classes for special education students. And my son's class, a number of other spec ed class, closed that spring. A couple of mothers of special needs students got on the radio at that point and offered to sell their kidneys to fund special needs classes. Now, it's interesting. They certainly got a lot of publicity, I'll tell you. But they also brought a lot of parents to their side. By doing something like this, all of a sudden, we began to realize that there were other parents out there of special needs students who were feeling desperate. And we started to work as special needs parents as well, not just parents as a whole, but also special needs parents from individual schools. At the same time, we went through, the second or maybe the third round of closing schools in the city. And by this point, parents were getting mad as hell and they weren't going to take it anymore. And we had citywide mobilizations to save neighborhood schools. The upshot was that there was one school closed, my eldest son's school, but nonetheless it became a real time of mobilization for parents to get involved, to start caring about education, to get their hands out there on the streets, get hands into the action and start doing some serious work about some of these issues. And at this point, where were you?
Well, of course, we were working through some of these closure processes, yeah. And maybe it's useful just to explain the dynamics that were at play here.